Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, July 30th, 2011. This is episode 791. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, visit netflix.com/twit. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account for 6 months, visit Squarespace.com and use the offer code TechGuy7.
Computers, the internet,
cell phones, camcorders,
MP3 players,
theater, all that jazz.
At 888
Ask Leo.
888-275-5336.
That's toll free from
anywhere in the U.S.
Outside the U.S., please Skype me.
Love to hear from you.
888-888-ASK-LEO.
Apple now has more cash
than the U.S. government.
That's only because we're running out of money in the U.S. government.
Don't worry. No big deal. We're just running out of money.
Until they solve this debt ceiling issue.
The U.S. government's cash is dwindling.
And is well under $70 billion.
That sounds like a lot of money.
It's not a lot for a whole country to run.
It is a lot for a corporation. I don't know of any corporation that has more than
I think Apple's got $76 billion on hand.
I don't know if it's like Steve Jobs' closet and bags.
$100 bills and bundles.
It's funny, we talked about the early days of Microsoft.
When Microsoft first started making money,
they didn't know what to do with it.
They were making a ton of money. I mean, cash like crazy.
And they didn't know what to do with it.
So they just went to the bank and said, we have some CDs, we'd like to buy some certificates of deposit.
You know, those are the ones with like 1% interest.
they just had so much cash.
They said, we got to do something.
I presume, and I'm not an expert on corporate governance.
But I presume at some point you take that money and you invest it wisely.
But it's good to have cash.
You know, for emergencies.
A rainy day.
Even corporations like Apple might have a rainy day.
$76 billion.
I thought it was a lot.
Google has $32 billion cash on hand.
I thought that was a lot.
They got more than twice.
And more than the U.S. government.
But it's not like Steve Jobs could rescue the U.S. government.
That would not be good.
Because he'd buy a week's time. That would be it.
Hey, you fixed it, Matt. Thank you.
I was having a little echo in my ear. If I sounded a little weird, that's because I was confused by life.
I don't know what the current amount of money that the U.S. government has is, but it's... The last I saw, The Atlantic reported, or actually it was the Financial Reports reported, that they had $73 billion and falling in the U.S. government, and Apple has $76
billion. Wow.
Here's a new spike. This is a warning to everybody. A virus warning. You know the bad guys. They're so clever. They scam like crazy. And the latest scam that's, you know, a lot of this is social engineering now, where they're trying to... convince you, if they can, with some urgency, so you won't think, you'll just act, that there's something wrong. So, you know, you get a phishing email from your bank saying, oh, you know, foreigners have accessed your account. You better get in here and change it, that kind of thing. And then, of course, you click the link in the email. It looks like your bank's page. You enter your password and your login.
And you don't get to the bank. Something went wrong. And you go, oh, well, because that happens on the internet. Something went wrong. And then, okay, I guess something went wrong. And meanwhile, the bad guys have your password and your login. So the latest one is comes from a hotel that says, oh, we are sorry. We have erroneously charged your credit card. These are going out, these spam emails, in the hundreds of millions. They attach a form to process the refund. Now, this is clever because even if, you know, they say, oh, we made a mistake. It was an erroneous charge. So even if you never, you know, even heard of that hotel, you might go, oh, well, that's not good. I do want my refund. But actually, the thing that you get that looks like a form that you double-click is a Trojan horse program that installs our favorite, the fake antivirus program. More social engineering. So social engineering, number one, is that we send you an email that says there's a, you know, mistaken transaction. Oops. And so you get, oh, I want my money back. But how could a form be any problem? I'm not clicking a link in an email. I know that's bad. Okay, a form's fine. You open the form and you fill it out. Then you get social engineering number two because nothing seems to have happened except that sometime at a later time, you will get those pop-ups. You've seen them. It says, you know, Windows Defender 2011, Windows Antivirus 2011. Looks like it could be real. Looks like it came from Microsoft. It says, you have a virus on here. But fortunately, we have the fix. Download that now. Give us, you know, some money. Sometimes they ask for money, sometimes not. So watch out if you get, all of this stuff. There's always different scams out there. This is just one of many. But watch out if you get an email that looks like it came from a hotel saying there was a phony bill or a bad transaction. Don't just go, okay,
I'll fix that. No problem. Hey, don't want a false, I don't want a phony transaction. Oh, sorry.
Let's see. What else is going on in the world? The Sony Walkman is back? That can't be right. Didn't Sony kill the Walkman? Well, their new Walkman is essentially an MP3 player. They just got approval through the FCC. No official announcement yet. But Sony has Walkman players A, S, and E series. There's a karaoke mode, language learning function, voice recording, and you can create a Sense Me station, kind of like a radio station from your stuff. I thought they killed the Walkman. I'm glad to see that brand live. I bought a Walkman. I remember buying a Walkman when they first came out at Macy's. That's where I bought all my electronics 25, 30 years ago. Because I had a Macy's charge card. I couldn't afford it any other way. That's where I bought my first Mac in 1984. And probably it was around then that I bought a Walkman. Man, I remember it was expensive. It was hundreds of dollars. It was the tape player. It had a button on it. It said mic. And you thought, oh, that's cool. And all it really did is somebody could talk to you while you were listening to the music. They pressed the mic button. You said, what? The Sacramento Business Journal says Apple's iPad is outselling Android tablets by, you want to guess, 24 to 1. For every Android tablet sold, 24 iPads are sold. Holy moly. That means there's something like a million Android tablets out there. You know, I have Android tablets. I like them, but as I've said before, I can see no compelling reason to buy one instead of an iPad, given that the iPad has all these applications. It's kind of mature technology. It's not more expensive, really. And I just got this. I just got the Chromebook. This is Google's other operating system. You know, Google has two operating systems, Android for the phones, and then something they call Chrome OS. This is like a netbook. It's very strange. It's netbook size, form factor. You know, it's light. It's got long battery life, probably 8 or 9 hours. And when you open it up, the browser's running, Chrome's running, and then you try to close it, and you can't because that's all there is. The whole idea of Chrome OS is it's a browser. That's it. And anything you want to do, you could, in theory, do in the browser. These are cheaper than, they're netbook cost, netbook, you know, speed. They do come with 3G in most cases, and usually 100 megabytes a month 3G, which isn't much. Not much you can do with that. Speaking of which, did you see this, that there, you know, that there is a unlimited, AT&T still has an unlimited service for people grandfathered in on the iPhone. Unlimited data. Now they've said, but if you go over 5 gigabytes, we're going to slow you way down. See, we've always known this. Unlimited data isn't really unlimited, is it? They're going to throttle you. Which means two things. Throttling means to strangle or choke, as well as to slow you down. We're going to go to the phones. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I want to talk about Netflix real quick before we run out of time here. Netflix.com/tech guy. It's a special URL for those of us who love watching movies and want to do it for free for a little bit. Netflix.com, netflix.com/tech guy. What is Netflix? Well, you probably know. I'm sure you've heard of Netflix. It is that great site where you can stream thousands of movies online. I'm just a big fan. I watch Netflix every night. If you have it, you already know about it. If you don't, click that Watch Instantly tab and take a look at all the variety of things you can watch. If you don't have it, try it free for a month. Netflix.com/tech guy. Only $7.99 a month for unlimited viewing. And if you already have it, do me a favor. Help support the Tech Guy podcast. Tell your friends, your family, your neighbors. Shout it from the rooftops. Netflix.com. Ooh, HUD, I love that movie. Netflix.com/tech guy. See, I got something to watch tonight. You're going to love it. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy.
88888 Ask Leo.
By the way, man,
I am getting myself back again.
Just so you know.
Thanks.
We're going to get to the phones in just a second.
I'm in a brand new studio.
So there's a little stuff going on behind the scenes as we futz around with it.
We moved the entire operation,
not just the Tech Guy show, but the entire studio operation for all the podcasts over to a new place. We call it the Twit Brick House. And if you watch on the stream live at live.twit.tv, you can see a great shot right now of the entire Twit Brick House with all of the... it's amazing. This thing is the most beautiful studio I've ever worked in. Normally, there aren't a lot of people here on Saturdays, but they all came in to celebrate the first Tech Guy show coming out of the new Tech Guy Labs. But what we did when we designed this studio that I'm in right now is we wanted to kind of make it similar to where I was. It's not exactly the same, but it has that feel, doesn't it? It kind of looks similar. It's like, in fact, on the radio, it should sound exactly the same. There's no change, right? My voice is exactly the same, I hope. We carefully contrived to make that the case. But if you're watching on TV, on the video at live.twit.tv, it might be a little disconcerting because it kind of looks the same. It kind of looks different. It's a little strange. We're going to try something in a bit. We're going to see if we can get Scott Wilkinson on the line. I guess that's tomorrow, isn't it? Good. I have a day to get used to this. I'll tell you what. Let's try this. Let's go to the phones. Mark in San Antonio, Texas. Our first call of the day. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I have a compact mini 110 netbook, and we want to sell it, and we want to wipe the data and restore it like new. However, the problem is it doesn't have a disk drive.
You didn't get the disks either, I betcha.
Did not get the disk, I've Googled, and we've come up empty.
So they didn't give you, this was a netbook, it sounds like, yes?
It's a netbook, compact mini 110 netbook.
And they didn't give you any media at all?
It didn't come, I have the box here in front of me, and it didn't have any type of media or even a website where I can go and download a restored information. So I'm stuck.
Yeah, you are, aren't you? The chat room's telling me, Mike NB in our chat room saying there's a HP Tools Is it a is it a folder? Is it a partition? How does he get to the HP tools? Look in the. Is it working? Is the thing running?
Yeah, it's running.
Okay. See, this is the problem with not getting a disk. As long as it's running and there's a recovery program on it, I guess you're okay. But as soon as it crashes, then what do you do? So there's a backup partition on these, according to Gauchum Benjamin and others in the chat room. And the HP tools will access that partition. If it the problem is they can't say, here, burn some CDs or DVDs for recovery because you don't even have an optical drive.
Do not have an optical drive, that's right.
So what do you want to do? Do you want to erase it? Do you want to start from scratch?
Yeah, I want to start it from scratch, just like I pulled it out of the box with the working XP system and just like new with all the new information so that when I sell it, they can still use it like it's new.
Good.
But my data is gone and it's not slow like it is now.
So what I'm being told in the chat room, and they seem to know, is press F12, reboot. And when you're in the reboot situation, you know, when you're in the, before you get to Windows, when you're in that black screen, tap mm-hmm. F12. That'll get you into setup, pre-Windows. Okay. And there should be, in the setup, there should be a restore command.
Okay.
That's what the chat room's telling me.
Okay.
You know, the problem, you can imagine the problem that they have, because they're selling you a netbook. First of all, it's very cheap. Second of all, it doesn't have a CD or a DVD player. So what do? The only thing they could do is to make a recovery partition on the hard drive and allow you to kind of recover it from that. If the hard drive dies, you're just out of luck. You're SOL.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it's not dead. You can do this. There is some concern about if the person you sell it to is really nefarious. You aren't really erasing everything from the drive. You're overwriting part of it, but there may still be stuff left over on the drive that didn't get overwritten. It's not visible, but with the right tools could be read.
I see.
So it's not exactly like you're erasing it. You are overwriting part of it. But the problem is when you use a computer, data gets written to all different parts of the drive, plus the swap file has data in it. And so somebody, just don't sell it to a bad guy.
Yeah, I'm planning on giving it to a nephew or
perfect.
Niece.
Perfect.
I don't think they can get too deep into it. But I want to give it to them where it's fast, like when I pulled it out of the box.
Yeah, it's always what you want to do when you're giving a computer to somebody is reinstall it as if it came out of the box. If you really want to be nice to the nephew, you might download all the Windows updates before you give it to him, just to make sure it's completely secure.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, Mark, thanks
all
for
right.
the call. Appreciate it, and thanks to the chat room. That is a great. I tell you, that is a great resource for me. Sometimes I call them my brain. If you want to join us in the chat room, easy enough to do. All you have to do is go to the website techguylabs.com. There's a link to the chat there. There's a link to the video if you want to see the new studio. But you know all that stuff. Techguylabs.com. Also to all 790 previous episodes, all the show notes and everything. Dion, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dion.
How you doing, Leo?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Called a while back about the China camera, and now I'm having another problem with changing a podcast.
Did you ever solve that? This was a camera he got, I don't know, it was eBay or whatever, but somewhere just kind of in the middle of nowhere. And
no, I never did.
No manual, nothing.
Yeah, I just ended up just buying another Logitech webcam and going with that.
Good. So what can I do for you today?
Now, my problem is when I made a podcast feed and it got accepted, I didn't know that the website I'm using didn't give me any, like, an update on subscribers or something like that, at least where I can see how I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm trying to use FeedBurner, but now I'm trying to figure out how I can transfer that feed without losing subscriptions, and I'm then having a hard time trying to figure out how to transfer my feed URL on iTunes.
The good news... Yeah, there's actually good news here, which is the iTunes feed itself, there's a field in it that says, I've moved. And it will change the URL permanently.
Okay.
So I have to find here the iTunes podcast help file. There's a file that explains all of these fields. And one of them. Now, what do you use FeedBurner to make a feed? Do you ever edit your XML that feed file at all?
No. See, I see it's a video, so I used blip.tv, and then I wanted to use FeedBurner, but when I went back to change it, it said this feed has already been submitted when I used FeedBurner.
Right.
I put in the blip URL that they gave me that automatically uploads to iTunes.
If you go to iTunes, if you search for iTunes podcasts, there is a section called Changing Your Feed URL. And there is an iTunes-specific tag called iTunes:new-feed-URL. It's in the RSS. You can change that, and it signals to iTunes, we've moved. And it should update iTunes, and actually, you should update most you won't get all of them, most podcast subscription programs. You know, while JP's waiting, I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk a little bit about my friends at Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. You know, they sponsor the radio show, but they also sponsor the podcast. And we're really glad to have them sponsor the podcast because, as you could tell, we put a lot of effort into making this easy for you to download and watch or listen to wherever you are. And actually, it's kind of a nice relationship because Squarespace makes it easy to download or listen to or create a website. They're the secret behind exceptional websites. Lots of podcasters use Squarespace. Photographers, artists, even stores and businesses use Squarespace. Squarespace is the hosting and the software, and you really like that because, first of all, it's the best hosting out there. You know, if you're going to have a website, you probably know this, but if you're going to have a website, you need to have a host. A lot of people go out and they get a name, then they search and they find a host, then they get software and they install it on the host. It's a lot of work. And frankly, it's a better solution to go to Squarespace.com for the best hosting and use the software designed for that hosting. The Squarespace content management system is so sweet. Take a look at it. You can use an iPad or iPhone to post, to moderate, to check stats. Did I say stats? The best stats package out there. You'll know everything about your visitors. That helps you make a better site. It's also got some great templates. Every site on Squarespace is unique. That's why if you look at the examples, you'll see no two Squarespace sites are alike. In e-commerce, here's some restaurants, health and wellness. Do this yourself. Go to squarespace.com and take a look at the examples. You'll see such an amazing array of just very creative websites. The nice thing about Squarespace is the serving is so good. Look how pretty this is. I don't know who I guess this is a musical group, but they just have done such a great job. Squarespace makes every site professional looking. Oh, I love Jars of Clay. Let me see their site. See how it's unique. They've got media on there. You can listen and watch videos. There's their Twitter. Here's their Flickr stream, their Facebook stream. Great integration of social networks. There's just nothing better. Now, here's the deal with Squarespace. If you go to squarespace.com right now and click that green try it free button, you could try it for 2 weeks. Absolutely free. You don't even need a credit card. Just a name of a site, a password, an email address. You'll be using all the great Squarespace software. A chance to see how Squarespace works for you. Please do give it a try for your next website or import your existing site using the great Squarespace importers from Movable Type, WordPress, Typepad, and Blogger. Now, if you decide to buy, very affordable. Remember, this is hosting and all the content management, automatic updates. When version 6 comes out any day now, you'll get it automatically. At the same price, as low as $10 a month. But I'll tell you what, if you use the code TECHGUY7, TECHGUY and the number 7, when you sign up, you'll save 10% off their already low price for the first 6 months. It's just a way of getting you to check it out. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY7 to save when you sign up. I think you'll like it a lot. And we really thank Squarespace. They're great guys for supporting the Tech Guy show, the Tech Guy podcast. Something we just started doing is putting advertisements on the podcasts, and we're just really excited about the chance to we've given the podcast away free for 7 years. Right, this was the first show I ever made a podcast out of back in 2004. It'll be 7 years in October. And we've never been able to make any money on the podcast. I just kind of did it for fun, but we've got some advertisers who said, yeah, we'll put some ads on it. And so that's, you know, if you like the podcast, you want to support it, support our sponsors. I guess that's all I have to say. All right, let's get back to the Tech Guy show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's a question, a comment, a suggestion. If You'd like to talk high-tech with me? I'd like to talk high-tech with you. Scott in Ohio, you're next. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Thanks for calling, Scott. What can I do for you?
What I have are several movies of my kids when they were little on VHS and 8mm tapes, which I have successfully converted to DVDs.
Okay.
And I'd like to actually put them on my PC and maybe even back them up, like, online with Carbonite or something like
sure.
that.
Sure, sure you would, because these are precious, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Videos tend to be awfully big, so online backup sometimes isn't such a good idea, depending on your bandwidth and so forth. But I think getting them off-site is a great idea. So it just depends how many there are and how big they are before. You don't want to be backing up terabytes online. It'd take forever.
Right.
So then that, you know, a case like that, what you probably want to do is get a big hard drive and take, you know, copy it to two of them, one at home and bring one to the office or somewhere else, and then it's off site. But let's get them first onto the hard drive.
Okay.
So they're all DVDs?
Correct.
That's easy. Fortunately, they're already digital. So the hard part's been done. You know, a lot of people come to us with VHS tapes, things like that, and then we have to convert those to bits before we can do anything with them. But a DVD is simple. You just rip it, which, you know, if you look at the DVD, did you make these DVDs or they were made on a camera? How were they made?
I made them.
Okay.
On just a Toshiba DVD recorder.
Oh, so you transferred them from tape.
Correct.
Ah, so you did the hard part. All right, so yep. Now you can just rip them, and there's a lot of programs to do that. If you want a commercial program, SlySoft, SlySoft.com makes a lot of great DVD software, ripping software. But frankly, a free program called Handbrake is probably all you need. Handbrake.fr, it's a French open source project. When you use Handbrake, it will convert it to H.264, to an MPEG-4 file, which is a good file format. It's compressed, though. So you want to make sure that you go into the Handbrake settings and say, I want maximum quality possible so that it doesn't compress more. You know, VHS already is low quality. So, these aren't going to look like HD movies anyway. But you want to make sure you don't make them any worse.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the straightforward solution. Ripping them. Lots of choices. Handbrake's free and available, easily available online. Once you've got those H.264 files, yeah, I think the best thing to do, see how big it is. If it's merely, gigabytes, then I think Carbonite or something like that is great. But if you're going into lots and lots of data, then get a terabyte or 2 terabyte drive. They're cheap at your big box stores. And put it on one of those and bring it to the office. Actually, remember, 3 copies of everything. So one on the hard, one internally maybe, one on an external, and one at the office. You got to have one offsite. You did the hard work already, though. Kevin in Las Vegas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I think I might have discovered a bug in Lion, and I wanted to ask your opinion about what's going on here.
Sure. Lion is the new OS X operating system from Apple. Just came out about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
I went to connect my VPN so I could connect to my office. And when I did, I got this crazy error message that said error 51 and then cannot connect to network subsystem. And so I Googled this, and this happened a long time ago, and I found a Rob Griffiths article on Macworld that explained how to fix it using the terminal. And I've done it a few times. There's been a million complaints about this. And always under Snow Leopard or Leopard, it worked fine. So today I had the same issue, so I went to the terminal and I put in the command, and it requests your admin password. Well, when I put my admin password in, it says, sorry, incorrect password, even though it is the correct password. I restarted the computer, I logged out, logged back in, nothing helped. And then when I called Apple, they basically said they thought after sending me to 3 different people, I might have had a bad migration during the change.
That's
from
not good.
Leopard to Lion.
Yeah. Do you use special software for your VPN, or you just use the built-in operating system?
I have one. It's a Cisco VPN.
Yeah, there you go. So what's almost, I'm surprised Apple didn't say, oh, it's just incompatible, because the Cisco VPN is not compatible with Lion. So I'm surprised Apple didn't just tell you that. This is not, we're seeing this a lot. Whenever you have your new operating system, it often takes a while for vendors to update their software. VPN is tricky. You know, if you're using the built-in VPN capabilities of the operating system, usually that will continue to work. In this case, you're using a third-party client. What is VPN? VPN stands for Virtual Private Networking. A lot of companies use it as a way for you to access the company's internal network securely from the outside world. If you think about it, they don't want to open up their network to anybody. They want to make sure hackers can't get into the internal company network, but employees who are on the road may need access to their computer or files in the database and things like that. So they create something called a virtual private network, which has some pretty tough security to log into it. I'm going to guess. I'm looking at an Apple thread right now that describes problems with Lion and VPN, and I would guess that that's probably the best place to look. It's I'll give you the discussion number. It's VPN and Lion OS 10.7, and the thread number is 319-2517 on the Apple support community. So it's discussions.apple.com. 319-2517. And, you know, it talks about a number of issues. In this case, they're talking about F5 FirePass VPN, but in the discussion, they mention a lot of others, including Cisco. And I think this is just fairly common. F5 is working on their version. I think Cisco's probably working on theirs. It's just what happens when you get a new operating system, unfortunately, is things like that start to break. I'm surprised that Apple didn't know that Cisco was having trouble with that. It is odd that it wouldn't accept your administrator password. Cisco has a thread, too. 209-5277 at the Cisco support, apparently, according, again, to the chat room. If you want to get into that chat room, go to techguylabs.com. You too can be my brain. Supportforums.cisco.com. The thread is 209-5277. OS 10 Lion and error 51. Well, there you go. That's the error, isn't it? This is exactly what it says. There is a fix here, it looks like, from Philip Hofstetter that does work. It says, open the PCF file, copy the group password encrypted to a website which will decode it. You'll get the clear text version of your group password, then use it as the shared password in the Mac client. I don't know what that means. I don't think that's exactly the problem you're having. However, you might want to look at this one as well. That's supportforums.cisco.com, 209-5277. Again, gold star chat room. Smart people in there. In fact, if the chat room continues to do this well, people are just going to stop calling the show and just go straight to the chat room. Maybe I shouldn't give them credit. You know, I thought of that. We have well over 1,000 people in the chat room right now. It's amazing all week because we moved studios. We've had, you know, twice as many people in our chat room. How many are in there right now, Dan? I see there's 1,000 in room one. How many in the overflow? Dan is saying he uses the official Cisco AnyConnect SSL VPN client online and it works perfectly fine. So maybe there isn't an issue. I don't know. There's 1,433 or something like that. Chatters. Go to techguylabs.com. Show notes are there. Links to everything I just talked about. Thanks to James DeRuvo. He's typing as I talk. And, of course, a link to our chat room and video, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little Weezer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number if you want to call in and ask a question, make a suggestion, make a comment, mock me. Tim in Michigan, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine, Tim.
Oh, thank you, good sir. I just want to say first and foremost that you were one of my inspirations for not only getting into broadcasting, but IT as well.
Well, that's great. So are you a disc jockey? What do you do?
Yeah, I do disc jockeying. I used to be the program director of one of our two radio stations on campus. I go to Central Michigan University.
That's how I got started, boy. College radio, it's great.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. And it has not as many restrictions as a tightly controlled commercial radio where it's just In the words of South Park, sad pandas. And nobody likes a sad panda.
It's no sad pandas. You know, it's funny. I just got, in fact, I got it right here, my FCC ham license. My first license, back when I was in college radio, you don't have to do this anymore, was a first FCC license was what they call a third-class ticket that allowed you to be a broadcaster. But now I've got the, I'm sure that Central Michigan has a pretty active amateur radio club. I think that's another thing to keep in mind. I wish I had done this when I was younger. Amateur radio is very interesting, especially now with the tech tie-in.
Exactly. I mean, you actually also inspired me to look into it, because I was looking through Debian Linux, and they have a ton of amateur radio applications.
Absolutely. You know, for a while I thought, oh, the hams are way behind, you know, that everything cool is happening, you know, in computers. Boy, I couldn't have been more wrong, I'll tell you. The hams invented this stuff. So I think it's pretty cool, and I wish I had pursued this a little more in college as part of my radio education, so... Just a tip. Anyway, what can I? So, thank you for the kind words, Tim. I really appreciate it. What can I do for you today?
Well, I am interested in building a custom nonlinear video editing and audio editing system. That's a long thing to put on, you know, a piece of paper, but I'm very excited about a piece of software. I don't know if you've heard about it. I've been trying to follow this. It's called Lightworks.
Yes. So I was going to suggest Lightworks, because since you mentioned Debian, you're obviously an open source guy, a Linux user, and Lightworks is, I think, the best, you know. When Apple changed Final Cut and went to this new Final Cut Pro 10, which so many people complained about, I actually said, here's an opportunity for Lightwork, because this is an open source video editing program that I haven't used it, so I have to say I'm working a little bit in the dark here. It's lightworksbeta.com if you want to know more about it. Are you using it now?
The thing is, I didn't want to use the Windows beta for a while. I'm trying.
Yeah, they still don't have a Linux version, or do they?
It's the Linux version and the Mac version are coming out roughly the same time. They think the fourth quarter of this year or the first quarter of next year.
See, it's weird for an open source project to be Windows only, but on the other hand, this was edited. This is the program they used to edit the King's Speech, so you know it's a mature program. I think this is very exciting, and I'd like to see more support for this. If people are disgruntled with what Apple did with Final Cut, well, here's an opportunity. You know, this is why we go open source, because then the users control it, right?
Exactly. It's kind of like Avid, what, you know, Final Cut was based off of. That's a proprietary Unix system, and it's way out of the budget of most normal people, unless you're rich Uncle Pennybags and you just have $1 billion in your, you know, Taylor account.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my feeling, is that you shouldn't, if you're going to abandon OS X because you don't like what, Final Cut, because you don't like what Apple did with it. Well, going to Adobe or Premiere or Avid is just leaping from the frying pan into the fire. You're still going to a completely closed proprietary solution, and the company has every right to change it in any way they see fit. And so that's more of the same. Whereas open source, you at least have some input into what's going on. There's a community around it. My only question, and this is the question that all the pros ask me when I say, well, let's just go to Lightworks, is it as robust, as reliable, as powerful? The fact that it was used by Tariq Anwar to edit the King's Speech is kind of encouraging, and they make a big deal about that right on the front page there. It's lightworksbeta.com. So you're thinking about what kind of hardware you need, or?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'll profess my ignorance. I am still learning about, like, rating hard drives and whatnot, and I wasn't sure if I should get, like, a RAID card and spend a ridiculous amount of cash on that, if I should spend
a lot. I'll tell you why video editors often use RAID. There's two reasons. One is you need massive hard drives. So one of the advantages of RAID is you can combine 4 2-terabyte drives to get an 8-terabyte solution. RAID can also speed up writes, and in editing, that's important. Reading and writing, of course, the faster you can do that, the faster you can work. And the final reason people use RAID is for reliability, redundancy. There are different kinds of RAID for each of these things, for speed, for size, and redundancy. RAID 5 kind of combines, is kind of the best of all those worlds, and means that you have if you have a RAID 5 array of 4 drives, if one of the drives dies, you can literally just take it out, put a new one in, and rebuild the RAID array, and you haven't lost a bit of data. So a lot of editors use large drive arrays for speed, reliability, and size. That's very common. But Drobo is a very good solution, frankly, for that. That's what a lot of people use. It's not exactly RAID. It's a proprietary RAID, but it has many of the same features. It just depends. How big are you going to do a two-hour movie?
Pretty much. It's like what I wanted to do is kind of, I was inspired also by what you're doing with Twit, and I wanted to do sort of a 24-hour radio news kind of network.
Awesome.
where geek culture, comics, video games, that kind of thing, kind of like the pop culture.
I think Final Cut Pro 10 is fine for that, and I don't think you need to, and it's cheap. It's, what is it, $200 now? And you don't need huge drives if you're doing, half-hour shows. I wouldn't emulate me because we've kind of spent a lot of money to do this, more than I would recommend anybody spend. Somebody sent me an email the other day, says, I'm ready to quit my job and follow in your footsteps and create a podcast network. And I said, whoa, I still haven't quit my job. Don't quit your job, dude. Nobody makes money at this. Don't quit your job. Keep your day job and build up slowly. Don't I think people sometimes look at what we've done with my podcast network with Twit and say, boy, I want to be there. We just built this beautiful studio and so forth. But we did it very gradually by bootstrapping it up, by building a community. And it took it took 6 years to get to this point. And even then, I was able to do it, I think, because I started with an audience from the cable TV shows. So I would go cheap. Now, the nice thing about Lightworks is it's free. So there's a real advantage to that. Of course, free, if you have to buy a Windows PC and a RAID array and all that stuff, it quickly becomes $5,000. And then you got.
I was looking at, going through Newegg or, Tiger Direct or whatever.
Yeah,
and
Newegg's fine. The thing, Tim, is that also, because you're a student, the skills you learn in doing all of this, it's an investment in your future.
Oh, yeah.
Accomplished video editors are, trust me, very valuable. You can go to Hollywood, you can go to New York, you can go to San Francisco, you can go anywhere. So I think it's a good thing to pursue. Just don't expect to make any money on it, which means don't spend more money than you can afford on it.
Yeah, that's been part of the kind of the goal, if you will. It's like I have, X amount of dollars, and let's see if I can make.
Yeah, exactly. I just interviewed a great photographer, Zach Arias. He's Z Arias on Twitter, Z-A-R-I-A-S. Beautiful photographer. And we asked him, this is the show we do, a photo show. It's called Twit Photo. I do with a great photographer named Catherine Hall. And she asked him for three tips. The very first tip is don't go into hock to become a professional photographer. It's just foolish. I would say the same thing for what you want to do. You're a student. See if you can get by with a bare-bone system you build yourself from Newegg. I love the idea of using open-source software like Lightworks because it's not going to cost you anything. Plus, when you get open-source software, there's a big community around it who want to pitch in and help you. So I think there's an advantage to doing Lightworks. I guess you're going to have to run it on Windows, though, huh?
Not for a while. I mean, I'm just going to wait until the beta's out. It's kind of like I'm gathering my pieces right now, and then it's like once it's out, it's like, here we go, right out of, right from the get-go.
All right. So you're going to make a nice Debian system.
Oh, yeah. I run Debian on my laptop, and it runs flawlessly. Yeah.
No, I'm a big Linux fan. I hope Linux is, for those who don't know, it's a free operating system. It's equivalent of Windows or Macintosh OS X, but it's completely free and open, and like Lightworks, developed by enthusiasts and supported by the community. And I think, the truth is we all use Linux every day because most websites are running on a form of Linux. Not to mention every Android phone. 500,000 Android phones a day now are being activated. That means 500,000 new Linux users every single day. That's kind of amazing. Well, Tim, good luck to you. Is there a website or anything?
Where I work at WNHW.org.
WNHW.org. Thank you, Tim. Leo Laporte, the E-Tech Guy. Anyway, I got to come back, so we could do it later.
I have an idea.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Hour number two of the Tech Guy Show. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion. You want to talk high-tech with me? I want to talk high-tech with you. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. You know, the easiest way to do this, you don't have to remember anything. Just go to techguylabs.com. We've got all the links there. Everything I talk about, links to the chat room, I talk about them a lot. Links to the bricks. we're still putting in bricks in the wall in here to help build to pay for this studio. A little fundraiser we did. We, you know what? We've sold almost 2,000 bricks now. So thank you, everybody who bought a brick. That's really helped us out an immense amount. Links also to the video, the audio, and the podcast downloads. TechGuyLabs.com. Also, that phone number right on the front page if you forget it. Norman in Los Angeles, you're next, listening on the great KFI. Hi, Norman.
Sir, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Well, I could be a little bit better, but I'm having some problems with my email in that I keep getting things returned to me, mail delivery failures that I never sent out. They seem to be originating in Italy, I think.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, is someone using my email address to send spam?
Precisely. But you can't stop them.
How does one stop such a thing?
You can't.
Okay. So I just...
We all get this. It's kind of internet backscatter. So here's the deal. Email is never designed to be secure. And the real problem with email is that the email address... The return reply address can be easily spoofed, not only with normal email programs, but also especially with the program spammers use. The spam software says, send out 8 million to this address, to these addresses from this mailing list, and what return address do you want to use? And the software has a checkbox that says, pick one at random, or fill in one, or whatever. You can have all your... you can do this yourself if you go into your email client. Change the return address to president@whitehouse.gov, and... It looks, and if, by the way, if a mailer program says, hey, there's nobody at this address, guess who gets the bounce back? Not you, president@whitehouse.gov, because that's the return address. There's nothing you can do to stop that. Now, a call should go out to sysadmins because this bounce back, oh, I don't have anybody at this address, just compounds the problem of spam. And there's no good reason for this bounce back. You know, the idea was originally when it was a much kinder, gentler world and everybody was good and there were no bad guys, that if you sent by accident, you know, you sent it to president@whitehouse.gov, but you misspelled president, that you'd get a return saying, hey, there's nobody named president here. Maybe you meant president. But that doesn't make sense in the world of spam because most misaddressed mail is just coming from some spammer. In other words, just ignore it.
Okay. So it's something that one has to end up living with.
Yeah, we all get it. It's not just you. It happens to everybody.
Yeah.
It's backscatter from spam. Now, you could very easily, and this is what I do, create a filter that, you know, you'll notice most of these messages have kind of similar subject lines. You could create a filter that just says, hey, if I get something like that, just throw it out. That's what I would do.
Okay. One other problem that I'm having with is when I open up Windows Explorer to open up my files, I'm getting, when I left-click on one of the icons, it says this file does not have a program associated with it for performing this action. This started happening just recently, so I have to right-click on it and say open, as opposed to what I would, you know, just double-click on it with the left.
So Windows maintains a what they call a file association database. The truth is, when you double-click a document, there is really no action. You know, you can double-click a program, it'll run the program. But what is the operating system going to do when you double-click a document? I can't run a document. So what it does is it looks up in its file association database, well, what program do I need to open to view this document? And if the program is in that file association database, it'll open it up. So for some reason, and it could be something went wrong in your system, it could be installed software that screwed this database up or whatever, but for some reason, the documents you're trying to open, what kind of documents are they?
It's a subfolder in my regular folders. So if I have a subfolder and a main folder, like my documents folder, And I open up that, and I've got like 20 different subfolders in there. If I click on it, it says I can't open it.
Oh, that's interesting. So it won't open the document, not the, I mean, the folder, not the document. That means that could be a little more serious. It, there, believe it or not, there is a file association for opening folders. But I have to think that that happened. It could happen just because, you know, something got screwed up. But it is also sometimes a sign of maybe a little infection going on. So I would want you to, at this point, whenever your system does something that's really kind of odd, all of a sudden, first thing I would do is run an antivirus scan. If you've got a good antivirus, make sure it's up-to-date scan. Maybe go online and do a, you know, get a second opinion from somewhere like antivirus.com. ESET has an online scanner. The Nod32 guys have an online scanner. Just check that and make sure that you don't have any malware on there. If there isn't any malware on there, then it's kind of, you can kind of fix this. But you have to go into the file associations database. You have to look at what the what you want to have happen when you double click a folder is Explorer to open up that folder. Something else is going on in there. Explorer, in other words, it doesn't know to open up Explorer. Something you can fix manually. In fact, you probably could, if you want to fix. I can't. This it's a couple of steps and it's complicated. But yeah, best to look online. Just Google. Explorer File Association, and you'll find a number of people have written entries on how to do this. It's not complicated. However, I'm a little wondering that there may be these things shouldn't go wrong. It is probably an indicator of how non-robust this system is, this file association database. It breaks easily. You also might want to it might be a sign that your hard drive is starting to have some problems. It could be a sign of a lot of things. Main thing to do is do that virus scan just to make sure it's not malware causing this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go, and I said we were going to go to Maine, so let's do it. Mike is on the line. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, it's great to talk to you. Your new studios look beautiful.
Thank
Everything
you.
Sounds great, although I have to tell you that while waiting on hold, the gain is way, way down. It's much harder to hear you than in the old studios.
That's not me. That's Premiere. Sorry. Can't help you.
Okay.
I don't feed music down the hole, but I'll tell Matt. Something happened in the studio. It's funny because I blame myself because we are in a new studio, so I don't blame you for blaming me, Mike. But we've had all sorts of problems in the radio, on the radio side, in the control room down there. We actually have an engineer in there. So, Matt, the music on hold is low.
Yeah, not the music on hold, listening to your show on hold.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, the stuff on hold.
Right.
They call it music on hold.
Okay.
Radio on hold. Me.
Radio on hold.
Yeah, and then you know, if you've never called a radio show, it's a little disconcerting because usually that's not unusual that it's a little low. And then I say it's time for Mike in Maine, and you hear this big chunk-conk. I don't know what that chunk-conk is, but then you hear a big chunk-conk, like the big metal thing fell on my head, and then you're on.
Yeah, and here I am.
And then all of a sudden I'm loud.
Not loud. Now it's perfect.
Normal. Now I'm normal, so I don't know. It's bizarre. I don't know.
What's to convey that I don't want to miss a word?
You know, well, I think one of the reasons they may do that is because I've noticed that sometimes callers just stay on hold after we're done forever because they're listening. We don't want it to sound too good. So what can I do for you, Mike?
Well, you had said that I was calling because I was unhappy with Firefox. First, I got to say, I'm a Firefox fan. I started with Firefox quite some time ago. I've been through all the builds. But the new Firefox 4 and now 5, I have found that it is much, much slower. I'm having a lot of trouble with the add-ons that I use. It's very, very glitchy. It's slower to open. It's slower to close. Many of the add-ons don't work or aren't working.
Why, Iota, you guys at Firefox!
It's free. You know, how much can I complain?
I know, you can't.
No, I was going to migrate to Chrome, and
I don't use Firefox anymore. I use Chrome. And one of the reasons I did is because with Firefox, it's so tempting to load it up with all these incredible Firefox extensions. But if you have too many, it really does slow it down. You might try just to see, create a new Firefox profile without any of those add-ons and see if it's faster.
I have tried that, and I found that it's not much faster. And okay. The other thing that I like about Firefox is, you can do it with Chrome, too. There's a Firefox and a Chrome Portable that works great
Put it on a USB key and carry it around, and then all of your surfing stuff is saved on that key and not on the computer you're using. I think that's a really good idea. I am a Chrome user. I moved from Chrome. I'm not sure why. I guess because I felt like Firefox was getting bloated. Have you tried Chrome?
There are two things I don't care about for Chrome. One is the interface that I'll get used to. I wish it had a menu bar, but okay, that's just me. But currently, Chrome doesn't support the transfer of bookmarks from Firefox into Chrome, and it won't until Chrome 13 comes out.
Well, that's annoying. Now, you can, I think, I may be wrong, can't you save your Firefox bookmarks in an HTML file and then import it?
No, the Firefox bookmarks now save in a JSON file.
Oh, it's JSON.
The only way to save.
Xmarks will do it, of course, xmarks.com. Not a bad idea to use Xmarks if you're going to use multiple browsers because it synchronizes browsers cross-platform. I used to use Xmarks. Once I started using Chrome on all platforms, Google just synchronizes my bookmarks, and I find that fantastic. Not only does it synchronize my bookmarks, you can have it synchronize passwords, extensions, even the theme. So when I set up a new computer, Mac, Windows, or Linux, I just log into my Google account on Chrome, and it's got everything. It's just a very sweet way to save everything. But if you don't like Chrome, you don't like Chrome. I can't force you to use it. Chrome is Google's version, by the way, of browser. So what we're talking about here is browsers, and there's Internet Explorer. That's the one that came with Windows. There's Safari. That's the one that comes with Macintosh. And then there's lots of other third-party browsers. Chrome works on all the platforms. It's the one I pretty much use all the time. So give it a try. I mean, you'll get used to the fact that there's no menu bar. In fact, I think Firefox is moving in that direction, too.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. They've also moved up their updates. I guess they're going to be updating every 30 or 90 days now.
It was so weird. I went to 4, and then 5 came out immediately.
Yeah.
Chrome, and the reason is because Chrome is now at 12, and Firefox has to keep up, right?
Who cares about the numbers?
I agree. I don't understand this whole version thing. But this is just... I think what Google wanted everybody to do is just ignore it. You know, the updates on Chrome happen without telling you. They just do it. And I think their goal was pay no attention to that number. Firefox, we used to pay a lot, and IE, we used to pay a lot of attention to what version of IE you're using or what version of Firefox you're using. And that Firefox is going to be very much more like Chrome, where we're just going to update it, don't look at it, just you know you always have the latest, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's the whole Microsoft way, you know, Windows 3, Windows 5, Windows 7,
right.
Whatever.
The numbers matter.
Yeah, who cares, you know?
No, it's just a number. We don't care. Now, they are telling me in the chat room that you might be interested in Firefox 7 or the betas thereof. They've sped it up a lot. I know the folks at Firefox are hearing complaints about speed, so I'm sure that they're focusing on speed. They claim to be very fast, but I think my experience is the same as yours, Mike. It feels sluggish.
It has definitely slowed down since 3.6.
Yeah, I think that's the case. They say Aurora, the next version, is faster, so it might be worth a try. I don't know. You know what's great? We have a choice. You know, any computer you use, you could have half a dozen different browsers, and there's no reason to use just one at a time, except for this bookmark issue. And for me, I think the Chrome... I just like it a lot. Now, there's a lot of people concerned about Google knowing too much about them. And if that's one of your concerns, you might as well just forget it. The only way not to have people know what you're doing on the Internet is to not use the Internet. It's just not to use the Internet. I mean, I'm not I agree. I think we all deserve privacy. But as soon as you go online, your Internet service provider knows everywhere you go, knows everything you do. federal government is requiring them to store that information for several years so that they can subpoena it at any time. So there's two people who know what you're up to, and that's before you even get to Google. And every website you go to and double-click the ad network, which is owned by Google, and many other ad networks also know where you're going. There's a great little Firefox plugin. Actually, it's a program that will run on any browser, I think, called Ghostery. If you want to know what little plugins are running when you browse the internet, keeping track of all the things you do, Ghostery is an interesting thing to play with. By the way, it's owned by a consortium of online ad companies. Ghostery.com. I think that this is the online, Evidon is the name of the company. The online, Evidon's purpose is to kind of make you trust online advertising more. By telling you what we're following. That's not a bad idea. More calls to come in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here we go. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and this is the show you've all been waiting for. The show that explains how this stuff works. Phone number 8888 Ask Leo. Michelle is in Long Beach, California. Thanks for hanging on, Michelle. Leo Laporte here. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say, this portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at DSL Extreme for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet to get DSL Extreme. Now you can speak. Sorry, Michelle.
Hi.
What can I do for you today?
And I was wondering if we might consider an iPad and use a GPS application on there.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm new to iPad 2 as well. So I understand we're going to want to get the 3G.
No, because you can't use it in England.
What do we need?
So that's the problem.
Okay.
Yeah, the problem with using data plans internationally, it may work, but what you'll get is a $1,000 bill when you get home. You might check with AT&T. When you have an iPhone, for instance, you can use the 3G in England. It's expensive, but you can go ahead up front and go to AT&T and say, I'm going to travel. I want the international data plan and pay ahead. It's about $1 a megabyte. So it's $100 for 100 megabytes. And if you're doing GPS, you're going to go through that data pretty quick.
Okay.
So here's what I recommend. Still get the iPad, just not use the 3G data. You can get a GPS program and cache the maps ahead of time. So go to your hotel. When you're at your hotel, use the Wi-Fi there, for instance, and say, I want all the maps for this area because we're going to be driving around. And then it won't need to get the maps from the 3G. You'll still need to use the GPS. So you still need a 3G iPad because you need the GPS. But that doesn't use data. It will use the maps.
Okay, so what we want to do then is download and cache the maps and get them loaded onto the laptop so we can just use it.
Or the iPad.
Yeah, to the iPad.
Right.
Now, am I going to want to get the 3G at all?
Yes, because you don't get GPS without 3G.
Okay. But
the other possibility, and this is a good one from the chat room, is when you get to England, you can buy a regional wireless card, a MiFi, for Great Britain. Buy it from, British Telecom or Orange or one of the British companies, and get data through that, and then use the iPad to connect to it via Wi-Fi. The key is not to use the iPad's 3G if you can avoid it. If an American iPad 3G data in England is going to be very pricey.
Okay, so I did look and see they've got O2 and Orange plans. So we can get an orange plan and then just go through it that way and pay for it as
no,
we need
No, you can't.
No?
You could change the SIM out of the iPad and do it that way.
Okay.
But you'd have to take that little SIM card out. I've never done this with an iPad. You do it with a phone. It's easy. You take the SIM card out of the phone. You buy an Orange or an O2 SIM card in Britain, and you can use the data. And usually it's prepaid data. That way, it'll be a lot cheaper. The problem is the iPad is a micro SIM. You'd have to unlock the iPad. I don't think you can do that. I think that they're saying that in the chat room, but I don't think you can do that. I think you really, if you're going to use O2 or Orange or one of the British telecom companies, you're going to want to get a wireless card, a 3G card that has Wi-Fi. It's like it's a MiFi card, and you could do it that way.
Okay.
Now they're saying True says that iPads are not locked. Is that really the case? They're not locked? You know, a phone, I guess not. I guess they couldn't be locked, right? A phone is locked where if you take the SIM card out and you put another SIM card in from a different company, it'll say, I'm not going to use that. You belong to AT&T unless you get an unlocked phone. Here's what you need to check. And now Baba says, well, if you buy it in the UK, you could use it. That's true. I would check. You got to get an AT&T iPad, first of all. I would check with AT&T and say, can I buy a SIM card in Britain and put it in this thing? If you can, then you can use a 3G data. Otherwise, Motion X GPS is the GPS I recommend. It's incredible. It's only $4.99. It's cheap. But the problem with it is it uses maps that it downloads. So what you want to do is go into the program and download the maps ahead of time, either before you leave the States or even in your hotel. And make sure you have those maps so it's not downloading them from the internet. And that'll work just fine.
So Motion X is an app for the iPad?
Yes. It's called Motion X GPS.
Okay.
They also have Motion X Drive, which is the turn-by-turn GPS. I know Motion X GPS downloads maps ahead of time. I'm not sure if Drive does. I'll have to look. I bet it does. It should say in the description on the iTunes store.
Okay.
Both of those, they're just great programs. Motion X Drive is my favorite GPS program, bar none. Really is fantastic.
Okay. Okay. Any other suggestions?
I think I like your idea of getting an iPad. The chat room's telling me for sure that the iPads are unlocked. You'd have to get a micro SIM card. You'd have to get it in Britain from a British phone company. You should check ahead and see what the cost is going to be. Otherwise, do what I said, which is just don't use the 3G at all and use Wi-Fi.
Okay, great.
Good luck. I know. It's a little complicated, isn't it?
It is. It's very complicated. And I could probably call Orange from here and ask them if they sell this micro SIM for the iPad.
Yes, you could do that, or you could even do that online, I bet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Good luck. Thank you for the call. That's a great question. And I know all about phones internationally because I've done that, but I've never taken my iPad overseas and tried to use the data, so I'm not sure. T-Mobile also is in the UK, so you might be able to call T-Mobile here and have them transfer you and so forth. The prepaid micro SIM is going to be the trick, is finding a prepaid micro SIM. I like the idea of not trying to use 3G because, if you do it wrong, you're going to cost so much money. When the iPhones first came out, we'd get people coming back from Europe not knowing that the iPhone's always getting data, even when you're not actively accessing it. It's always downloading email and stuff. And coming back and getting $10,000 phone bills. Huge. Yeah, I'm not even exaggerating. $10,000 phone bills. So you got to be very careful using 3G wireless data internationally. Plan ahead on that one. 8888 ask. It's a mess, isn't it? It's telecom is the mess. That's the real problem. It's just a mess everywhere, including here. 8888 ask Leo. Don is in Cranston, Rhode Island. Hey, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon, Don.
Oh man, I wish I could be a broadcaster, but I've been cursed with that Rhode Island accent.
I love that accent. You know, I think this is one of the worst things that television and radio have done to the United States is kind of homogenize the accent. We all have Tom Brokaw's Midwestern accent now. Keep that Cranston accent. Let's hear more of that.
All right. I got
I like it. Diversity.
I just got an iPad recently, and I got the 16 gigabyte version. And I thought this would be easy, but it seems to be more difficult than I realized. All I want to do is be able to stream content to it, music especially, without a computer. Like, is there like a hard drive unit that
yes.
will connect to my router, and I can, you know, connect to the iPad wirelessly?
Yes. In fact, one just came out that has Wi-Fi built into it. What okay. you need, though, for it to play back on the iPad is it needs to support the iTunes server format. So I got to take a break. Hang on. When we come back, I'll tell you what to get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, rocking us out here. 88-88. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. We were talking to Don in Cranston, Rhode Island, and Don wanted to so you've got an iPad, and
correct.
You want to play music from a central hard drive, but you don't want to have a computer to do it.
Right.
So what you need is a hard drive that supports Wi-Fi. Are you going to, a couple of things. Do you have a Wi-Fi router?
Yes.
Okay, sometimes Wi-Fi routers have USB ports on them. If it does, you could probably plug in a hard drive, and it might actually do all of the serving for you. You could also get a thing called Pogo Plug, which is a really cool little bit of hardware that plugs into your Ethernet, plugs into a USB hard drive. They don't provide the hard drives. The Pogo Plug's $100. And it will serve, if it sees music on there, it'll serve it iTunes style. It'll look like a shared iTunes folder.
Okay.
Which is what you want. There's also, I'm trying to remember if it's Western Digital. I think it might be Western Digital makes a hard drive with built-in Wi-Fi, which is kind of crazy. So it's the, is that it?
Well, there's a new product that just came out that I've been looking at. It's called G-Connect.
That's it.
Hitachi makes it.
Yeah, that's it, G-Connect.
So is that it?
Yeah, I think it is. Let me look here.
It's a little pricey, and it's only 500 gigabytes.
500 gigabytes, but it has Wi-Fi.
Yes.
So,
and I don't understand. That seems redundant.
Well, it's for somebody like you.
Actually, okay.
You should understand. Of all people, you should understand this, because the idea is that this drive has its own Wi-Fi built in. You could take it in the car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you could take it anywhere that you wanted to, plug it in to the wall, and then your iPad could see it and play music from it.
Okay, so that's probably what I should.
Well, it's
invest.
A more expensive way to do it. I think the Pogo Plug would probably be less expensive, because you could put a terabyte drive on a Pogo Plug for a couple hundred, maybe $250. That's a lot of storage. This is $200 for the G Connect.
Music on it.
Say again.
And I already have a drive with music on it, and it's in it's in my Windows 7 machine. If I put that in an external USB container, and that's not the word, but if I put that in an external drive, will the Pogo Plug see that, or does it have to be in
Pogo Plug sees the music folder.
It sees the music folder.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little concerned, actually, now that I think about it. I'm not sure that they've configured. The chat room is saying that the way the iPad works, you have to be watching. Look at an iTunes. You actually have to attach yourself to an iTunes. Remember, you enter in that number, and the iTunes says, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Is there no way to see iTunes shares on the iPad? I mean, iTunes server on the iPad. That seems like that's an unfortunate thing. Maybe Apple does that intentionally.
Yep.
Boy, you'd sure think they would. I mean, you could do that with a computer.
Right.
Let me look into that one.
Be in the show.
We'll put it in the show notes. And then Seagate makes a product. This is the GoFlex. That's the one I was thinking of, not the G-Connect, but the GoFlex. Same idea.
Okay.
Now that's the issue, is how do we do this on an iPad? So let me do some research for you on that one, because I think the chat room is right when they say the iPad likes to see an iTunes running, not an iTunes server, but an iTunes itself. That's a, you know, that's unfortunate. Typical of Apple, though. You know, I mean, there are iTunes servers. You know, if you buy a network attached storage unit, for instance, have all your music on it, it acts as an iTunes server on your network, and then any iTunes can see it and play the music. It says, oh, there's shared music. But I do remember now, when you connect an iPad or an iPhone, it says, here's a number, enter this into your iTunes to do the sharing. They've made it a closed environment. No reason to do that, except perhaps the music industry said, well, we don't want them accidentally pirating music or anything like that. The GoFlex is the one I was thinking of. The Gizwiz told me about this one. Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guru. This is the Wi-Fi hard drive, like the G-Connect. Dick was telling me about this one. It's an interesting idea to have a hard drive with Wi-Fi built in, and these are portable. You can carry them around with you. Now I have to do some research. I might have to break out the iPad and try this out, but I think that, as I remember, if you want to share music on an iPad, iPad has to see iTunes running. Terrible idea. Terrible idea. What's wrong with an iTunes server? Hey, let's say hi to Ben. He's in Hemet, California. Hey, Ben, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'm going to take a trip up to my aunt's in the near future, and I just got an iPod Touch, and here in my house I have Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And so I've been looking into it and trying to decide what I should bring to get Wi-Fi at my aunt's house.
She doesn't have Wi-Fi? Does she have internet access?
Yes, she has internet access. She just doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Okay. So does she have a router, do you know, or does she only have one computer plugged right into the modem?
I think she does have a router,
okay.
But I'm not quite sure.
Okay. And she has high-speed internet, not dial-up, right?
Right.
Okay. So all you really have to do is bring a Wi-Fi router with you. Any Wi-Fi router. You can get an inexpensive one and plug it into her router. She'll have Ethernet, you know, coming out of her router. You plug it into your Wi-Fi adapter. I do this in hotels. I used to. Nowadays, most hotels have Wi-Fi. But in the days when hotels only had Ethernet jacks, I would bring an Airport Express, which is Apple's little $99 Wi-Fi router, plug it into the Ethernet and plug it into the wall to give it power. And now I've got Wi-Fi coming from the hotel's bandwidth in the room. So I could use my, you know, iPod Touch, for instance. So you need a little Wi-Fi router. Any kind will do, as long as she has a router that you can plug into.
Well, I was considering one of those things that you actually plug into the computer, and you can only use it when the computer's on.
Oh, that's interesting. So you share the computer's internet access.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a little bit smaller and more portable.
Yeah, I haven't used those. Who makes them? Let me look into them. Who makes them?
A couple companies. I've seen some from Cisco and Linksys.
And the idea is to take the internet access the computer has and share it?
Yep, pretty much.
Huh. I've never used that. I would try it before you leave.
Okay.
If her computer has a Wi-Fi card in it, which many do, you don't need that. If she's got a laptop, for instance, plugged into her internet access, you turn on internet connection sharing in Windows or Mac, and you can share that connection. It's what's called an ad hoc network. So if she already has a Wi-Fi enabled computer, you don't even need to buy anything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Playmate over there. Good day to you, Leo Laporte.
Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and the works at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. If you want to call in, ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, help out. We've also got a great website, techguylabs.com. You can go there, get in show notes from all our 790 previous shows. This is, yes, 791. Also links there to the chat room, the video, the audio. And video's good today. If you've not seen our new studio, we're broadcasting out of the new Brick House Studios that we just completed construction on last Sunday, right after the show. And we've moved in here, and I'm having a blast. Having a lot of fun. So right before the break, we had a caller who said, I want to get a hard drive, Wi-Fi, stream data, music particularly, to my iPad. So I want to listen. I don't want a computer to do this. I want to have my iPad, but not store the music on it. I want my hard drive to have the music. Of course, this is what eventually iCloud, Amazon, or Apple's cloud service will do. Amazon has a similar service with their cloud music, and so does Google. But he wants to have it on his own local hard drive and streamed. And I did find a program. I did a little searching around for it, and I found a little program that I am told works. I haven't tried it, called Stream to Me. Stream to me only with thine eyes. The idea is Stream to Me runs on your iPad and will let you see music. Now, plays viewers are streamed over the network from another. No, this isn't the solution. I take it back. Has to come from a Mac or PC. See, that's the problem. Apple has decided in its infinite wisdom, in the infinite wisdom of Mr. Steve Jobs, that you can't stream from a hard drive using iTunes server to an iPad. You could do it to an Apple, to a Mac, to a PC, but not to an iPad. So Stream to Me needs a computer, unfortunately. This guy didn't want to use a computer at all. I'm going to keep looking. I'm going to keep looking. John, Ontario, Canada, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm just watching you on tape delay, so I'll wait till you catch up.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Well, I'll tell you what. You ask your question, and then I'll answer 20 seconds later.
Well, that works. Okay.
What can I do for you?
I'm looking to buy a tablet of some sort.
Okay.
I want to edit video. I don't know which one to go with.
There really is only one, period. And that's the iPad.
Yeah, except you can't get anything into that one.
It's hard to get it in, but they do have the iMovie editor on there. So if you shoot movie with the iPad, you can get it in. And there are, you can use it. And there are ways to get video into the iPad for editing. You're right. This is similar to that previous question. For some reason, Apple's just locking this stuff down. And it's a shame because it's as if Apple's saying, look, we control the horizontal. We control the video. We control the vertical. Don't touch your dial. We're in charge. And it's crazy to make something that has a great video editor on it, iMovie, and then say, but you can only edit movies you shoot on the iPad. That's just nuts. I don't know of any other tablet. I mean, there are other tablets that have SD card slots. It'd be easy to get the movies into. But I don't know of any Android video editors. Certainly nothing that is comparable to iMovie.
Now, I think the Acer Icona had Windows 7 on it.
That would be another way to do it. Yeah, if you get the Iconia from Acer, you've got a Windows laptop. So then you could run Windows Movie Maker. You could easily get files into it. The problem really is, in my opinion, Windows 7 is not touch native. Maybe that's the way to put it. Yes, there are touch features in it. And Microsoft is very aggressive about putting touch into Windows 7, but it is not touch native. And I think what we've learned over 10 years of Microsoft Windows-based tablets is that a Windows operating system on a tablet is just a disconnect. You need an application or other hardware that was designed for touch. You need an operating system that was designed for the ground up for touch. Now, Microsoft says Windows 8 is, that's going to be good for tablets. But as I look at it, it looks like it's just a shell on top of Windows 7 with some touch features. The real question is, can you run
Windows Movie Maker in a touch-native way? Or are you just using your finger like a mouse? Because if you're using your finger like a mouse, I don't think that's good. I don't think that's a solution. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yep, got what you're saying.
Yeah. So what I would try to do... I forgot. You're going to get your answer in 20 seconds. What I would do, John, if I were you, is try to figure out... There are ways to get video into the iPad so you can edit it. Try to figure out if any of those ways will work for your workflow. Where is the video that you want to edit coming from? Why do you want to do it on a tablet?
Well, that way I can sit anywhere with the tablet as opposed to a laptop in front of me.
Right.
It's just more portable that way. I can even do it at a hockey game.
The great thing about iMovie on the iPad, if you're shooting the video on the iPad, and by the way, the iPad has decent video, better video than it does stills, then you shoot the movie, edit it in the iPad, and you can do a great job. But it is hard to get other video files into the iPad for editing. Why don't you just bring a laptop with you? I think that's really the solution. Or a convertible, maybe. A very lightweight laptop. Something like that.
Yeah, there's one of them now. Tablets is a convertible, so yeah, it might be a thing.
A convertible, then you have access to a mouse and a keyboard. And I suspect that when you're using something like Windows Movie Maker or Premiere or whatever video editing program you're using, they're designed to be used, let's face it, with a mouse and a keyboard. So even if you have a tablet interface to it, it's going to be, you know, I don't know if you've ever used a Windows tablet, but, you know, as you move your finger around on the screen, all you're doing is moving the arrow around. You have to tap to click. And if you have to type something, it pops up a virtual keyboard that you have to it's just hard to use. It's an afterthought. So that's why, I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Apple's iPad outselling Android and all other tablets 24-1. 24 times. That's huge. And the reason is it works. It does what you expect it to do. It's designed from the ground up for the touch interface. I love the idea. And, you know, this is why I carry a MacBook Air with me. And there are some good Windows machines like this. They're thin. They're light. It's not much heavier or bigger than an iPad. And yet it's a full computer. So to me, the Air or, you know, Dell, Acer, and others make similar very thin and light notebooks. There's a new one, I think, from Lenovo that looks really sweet. That's, if you're going to do video editing, get a real computer. Don't try to do it on a tablet. Unless, you know, you're using iMovie on an iPad with video intended for it. And then that's a pretty decent compromise. Thanks for the call. Keep listening. You'll get your answer in about 20 minutes. JP in Belgium. Wow, it's international hour. Hi, JP. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I just want to tell you that I love your show.
Thank you.
Listening to it for the last, I think in the late 90s.
Wow. Now, do you listen to the current show via on the stream, or do you download the podcast? How do you get it?
You mean from the 90s?
No, this show.
this show, I'm direct. Otherwise, it's through iTunes. I'm 9 hours ahead, so I download it. But today, I was able to catch you live, so
good.
I just give you a call.
What do you think of the new studio? You like it?
It's beautiful.
Isn't it gorgeous? We just really had it.
Awesome.
I had a blast working on this designing. We had such a good team doing it. It's ridiculously overkill, but what the heck? I'm worth it. I only have about 30 seconds left. Do you want to ask your question or do you want to hold on and we'll go through the break?
In regards to the Galaxy Tab 10.1?
Yeah.
I can wait 30 seconds.
Well, I have a 10.1. I like it. Well, there's the magic sound that says we better wait. JP's calling from Belgium. We'll help you with your tablet question when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to the magic of the internet, speaking with JP in Belgium. Are you on Skype, JP?
No, I'm using a voice over IP system.
Oh, that's great. It sounds so good.
I'm quite amazed. I got a Siemens C470 station.
Uh-huh.
Multiple accounts, and I'm using VoIPBuster.
Is VoIPBuster your provider? Is that a company that provides VoIP access?
It does. It's a company from Switzerland.
Okay.
They have a real good deal. Basically, you drop in $10 into the bucket, and it allows you to make free phone calls all over the world, basically, any fixed line for 180 days.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, we're, you know, it's funny because when you build a new building, a new studio, a new place of business, normally what you would do is go to the local phone company. You'd put lines on every phones on every desk, right? And at first, that's what I thought I was going to do. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. Do we really need to do that? You know, if people are going to make personal calls, everybody has a cell phone. So that, you know, when their spouse calls or their boyfriend or whatever, they just do it on the cell phone. And then for our business, I guess we need a business line, but do we need a phone on every desk? So what I ended up doing is going to a company called Ring Central. It's probably very similar. And they're going to put voice over IP at every desk using a computer or a laptop. And then we will have regular phones in places that need regular phones. This whole world of telephony is completely changing. I feel sorry for the phone company because they're kind of stuck in a model that I don't think has much future.
Well, it's used virtually in every office. Right. At least here in Europe, they all use this system.
Really? Wow.
They can be run onto a laptop.
Right, exactly. So I don't, you know, one of the big expenses besides the monthly fee is buying a phone for every desk.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that. You'd use a laptop and headphones, and you have what's called a SIP client. That's the kind of software you need. But I presume that's what you're doing right now, right?
That is exactly it. I have five accounts in it. I have one inbound that's paid. That's my regular number. And for any outbound, I use the Voidbuster.
Isn't that clever? I just love it. Anyway, enough of that, JP. What you said you're looking at the Samsung Galaxy Tab. I have the 10.1. I really like it. I like the 7-inch, too. I think Samsung, though, did a nice job with the 10.1. It's very similar to the iPad. Very thin, very light, good battery life. Biggest difference is it's 16:9 instead of 4:3 aspect ratio, which the iPad is.
Right. My question is more, I went ahead and bought the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1V.
Okay. What does that mean? Is that does that have 3G in it, or...?
It does have 3G. That generation of a tablet, I don't believe, had a Wi-Fi version.
Right.
But it's exactly the same one as the Samsung Limited Edition that they put out.
Oh, so it has the Android guys on the back?
No, it does have the just has the Samsung logo. Ah. And then somewhere on the top right, it has Limited Edition. And apparently, they were distributed to these guys for development purposes at the I.O.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's where I got mine at Google I.O. Now, the V stands for Vodafone, right?
Right.
So that's the phone company that you're using in Belgium.
No. I'm using a third-party KPN as a SIM card.
Okay.
Because it's much cheaper. I mean, it's, €10 for 2 gigs of data versus...
Wow.
€34 for 2 gigs of data.
That's a great deal.
So, what I wanted to talk about is this 10.1V was actually the overstock that Vodafone acquired as an exclusive deal to sell it to the and flood the market with it.
Okay.
And I got myself the 10.1V, and today, well, I'm stuck with the 3.0.1 version of Android.
Ah, they've not updated it.
It's not updated. I've contacted Vodafone Australia, and they've actually put the unit into life.
Yeah, they don't make it anymore.
They don't make it anymore, but the accessories that were supposed to go with it to allow you to attach peripherals to it are no longer available for the unit, as you need 3.1 to run them.
Oh, boy. Does it use, as the Galaxy Tab in the States does, a proprietary 30-pin connector? Or does it use a standard USB connector?
No, you need an adapter.
Yeah. You know, this is a great candidate for getting rooted and then finding somebody who's put a ROM together for it, which I bet somebody has.
Well, that would be probably XDA, but nothing has come out that way.
No,
but- I'm stuck with a 10.1V that's not being updated, and I've called Samsung Holland, Samsung Belgium. Nobody knows anything about it. The answer is simple. They do not support the 10.1V.
Yeah, and this is a problem we have all the time with Android phones, where older phones don't get the new operating system.
Right.
So you're using, the 3.0 was pretty bad. Even Google said, oh, we rushed this thing out. It was terrible. So they moved everybody in the States to 3.1. Now, the good news is Android is open source, and I don't know if they've yet open sourced 3.1 version of Android.
Well, I understand that Google wants to make sure that these tablets are not fragmented like these right. Android phones are, which is a good idea. So that means one update comes out and all the tablets gets it, except for the 10.1V.
Well, you've got Honeycomb on there. You really don't want that version of Honeycomb. You got the thing. I'd say this is a great opportunity to experiment with it. You know, this happens, unfortunately, all the time where, you know, hardware is discontinued. It's a shame that you'd have an end of life of something that's less than a year old. That seems a little premature, but the good news is Android's open source. This thing is eminently hackable, I'm sure. It may be that they haven't done it yet. Maybe you need to kind of start the ball rolling, JP. I have my G2X here, which is the American version of the LG P9999, I think is the LG number. It's the Optimus, I think. And this, it comes from T-Mobile. They haven't updated it to the latest version of Android. But fortunately, some hackers have managed to create a version of the latest Gingerbread operating system for it. I was able to root the phone, which means it's like jailbreaking on the Apple side. It means being able to modify the phone by getting access as a super user, as an administrative user, and then download the Cyanogen ROM, which is a fantastic ROM. And now I'm at Ginger. Not only am I at Gingerbread, but I this battery life is better. It doesn't crash like the G2X stock version from T-Mobile does. Doesn't reboot spontaneously. It's actually made it much more reliable, much more usable. And this is not illegal, and frankly, I think they encourage it. Google encourages it by open sourcing Android. So, JP, take matters into your own hands. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, waning half hour of hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. Taking your calls, talking iTech. Michael in Alabama, you're next. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
That's great. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Good. What can I do for you?
I'm trying to start my own business. What I'm doing is I'm trying to do iPhone, iPad, iPod repair because for people who normally have their phones out of warranty and crack their screen and whatnot.
This turns out to be a really good business. I don't know why, but I guess a lot of people crack their screens. My friend Steve Martin, I asked Steve Martin how he liked the iPhone 4. He said they took a perfect phone and then made it slippery and out of glass. And that's why this is a good business to be in right now, Michael.
The thing that I'm looking at is I'm wanting to try to find a application for right now. I want it to be mobile on both the iPhone and the iPad, but right now the only thing I have is an iPhone 4, to where I can track my customers and their devices. Or if they give me a phone, I can enter things like the model number, the serial number, put their contact information in, and things like that so that I can keep track of ordering parts and what device goes with what customer.
You know what I would suggest is this is going to be a fairly custom database. You know, you could look around for somebody who's in a similar business and maybe design a database like this for the iPad or iPhone, or what I would suggest is using Bento, B-E-N-T-O. This is a database program from the FileMaker folks. Very easy to work with. You create a Bento database. You know, you design it for yourself with all the fields you want. You can do it on the Mac. And then they have an iPad and iPhone version. So you can keep the data on your iPad or iPhone, update it, fill in the database. It's got full functionality. It's fairly affordable, too. I think it's $50 for the Mac version. And then I think the
Not sure how much the iPad and iPhone versions are, but they're a few dollars. They're not very expensive.
Will it also work on a Windows PC? Because unfortunately right now I don't actually have a Mac. I've only got Windows PC.
Rats. No, it's the desktop version is Mac only. FileMaker is kind of a Mac only company. I wonder what else that we, you know, so you understand what I'm saying, which is you want to design a database that has your own fields in it and then have the application that runs the same database on all of those platforms. FileMaker does make a Windows version. I don't know if FileMaker is compatible, however, with Bento. Why don't you visit FileMaker.com and check it out? Otherwise, I guess you could do it in a spreadsheet, Google Docs spreadsheet, perhaps, something like that. What you need is a cross-platform database solution.
Now, I know the majority of what I'm going to be, as far as when I'm actually using for my business, I'm probably going to end up using the iPhone and the iPad as far as the major portion of trying to keep track of my customers.
Right. That's why I like Bento, because it's iPad and iPhone, specific apps. So you once you design the database, maybe you can get, the truth is you could get somebody to design this database for you or even use an existing database. You then don't need the Mac side of it. You just do it on your iPhone, your iPad, or your iPod Touch, and that's your database. iPad, for instance, would be perfect for this. If you design it for the iPad screen, it'd be perfect for it.
Okay.
So that might be the solution. You only need the Mac to design the database.
Okay.
Yeah. I really like this as a custom solution, because you're going to have your own specific fields that you want to keep track of. I'm thinking, of making a ham log. You log your operations on your ham outfit, your amateur radio outfit, who you talk to, your operating power, what kind of antenna, that kind of thing. And of course you can buy books to do it. There's online logs that are very well established, but I was thinking this would be a good solution. Put it on the iPad, create the database with all the fields you need, and there it is. And you just have the iPad sitting there at your ham station. FileMaker has a iPhone app for it, but Bento is really simple. And has the virtue of being very, very simple for this. Juan in the Dominican Republic. Man, we're getting all sorts of people from all over the world. Hey, Juan.
Oh, hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for hanging on for so long. Thank goodness you're on Skype.
Yeah, Leo, you know that I know you. I have been following you since the beginning, and this is my first time online.
Well, it's about time. You know what we say in the States? Long time listener, first time caller.
Okay. We love you here, Leo.
Thank you.
Okay, Leo, I have some questions for you. Actually, there are two of them.
Okay.
I need a developer or maybe a program. We have a land development and low housing income develop of houses.
Okay.
We're doing here a new project for 10,000 houses, so we're going to need something to be checked by iPhones or iPad.
So you need a developer to write an application, basically.
Yeah, project management, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you could look at canned apps, but if you're looking to do it yourself, then there are a number of websites designed for developers and people like you to get together. The one I've recommended in the past and I like a lot is called Elance. Elance. It's like freelance without the F-R-E in front. Elance. And lots of programmers are on there. Now, we talked to somebody last week who I gave the same advice to 6 months ago. He had an application he wanted to develop. He had the idea, but he wasn't, wasn't a programmer, and he wanted to find a programmer. And he called back last week and said, well, I wanted to thank you because you recommended Elance. And after a while, I was able to get what I wanted done. He said the first programmer I hired had a great resume, lots of recommendations, but he just kind of left me hanging. He wasn't very communicative. He wasn't very good. And in the long run, he didn't give us anything we could use. Money down the tubes. But he went back to Elance, and the second guy he hired was great. And he got a great app out of it, and he's really happy. So that's probably true anywhere. Anytime you're hiring employees, it is a little bit of hit or miss. But this is a great place, I think, to go. I think a lot of programmers go there to get a job, as well as web designers and other tech skills. And you'll find programmers all over the world. A lot of times you go to India or Eastern Europe and you can get programmers much less expensive than in the States. And I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. I mean, I think they're just as competent. In fact, maybe even more so. Elance, ELANCE.com. Good luck, Juan. It sounds like a great project. Sounds really good. Our GizWiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up at 47 minutes after the hour with his Gadget of the Week. Meanwhile, let's continue with the calls. Robert, Long Beach. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. First time. Long time, first time.
That's it. That's the short version. Hey, Robert.
Got a question for you. I'm about to purchase. I have a computer on back order. I haven't purchased it yet. It's a HP DV7 Pavilion. 640 rounds of hard drive, 8 gigabytes of memory. But the processor is an old processor. It's an AMD Phenom 2 P960 quad-core processor. Is that a good processor?
It's okay. You're right. It's older. AMD, you know, it's the story of AMD is interesting. The AMD advanced micro devices went head-to-head with Intel over the last decade. And early in the decade was making better processors at a lower price. They really put the screws to Intel. But Intel's response was to make a better processor, and they did. They actually found a design team in Israel that had done some really good work. The design team came up with the Core 2 and now the i5 and i7. And I think, frankly, the Intel processors are better. However, it doesn't mean the Phenom's not a good processor. I think it's fine, and I'm sure it's inexpensive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Actually, don't call it because I've got like 18 people waiting to talk to me. And look who's here, lo and behold, through the magic of Skype, all the way from Manhattan, Dick DiBartolo. He's larger than life. Hey, Dick.
Oh, my word. This is the faux cottage you're in now, right?
Yes. It's actually kind of disturbing, isn't it? It looks like in some weird way we're actually back in the old studio, but it's all different.
It's different. It's clearer. It's bigger.
It's widescreen.
And it tastes better.
And it tastes great, but less filling.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It's like I almost felt like I was out there last week. It's just amazing how time flies.
You were. And I was very grateful to you for coming out and seeing us in the grand opening of the studio.
That was just absolutely great. That parade knocked me out.
You were in the parade. You wore your fez and you marched. You're so game. You're such a good sport.
I'm game for anything, pal. Yeah, I'll do it.
So I have some great gadgets for later in our weekly daily GizWiz show, but we like to get you on the radio show to hawk your gadgets. So what do you got today?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's something that we talked about on the weekly Daily GizWiz, and since I like it so much, I thought we would talk about the Time Command Doc.
The Time Commander Doc.
Doc, yes. And that's for all the Apple products, the iPhone, iPod Touch, the iPad. And it's a dock with a difference. It's a difference doc. Okay. So, first of all, it comes with an enormous plug. And I thought, oh, this is the biggest plug I've ever seen. Then on the side of it, there's an AC outlet. And I go, oh, I see. They figured it's going to block an outlet. So they give you a place to plug something else in. Well, it turns out that you plug your lamp in there.
Oh.
So now your iPad, iPod, your Apple product can now also control the lamp. So
I really like this idea. So what you're saying is this is an alarm clock that turns on the lights too.
If you want, you can wake up to light and then have your music come on. You can have it dim down slowly as you fall asleep.
Oh, that's cool. So it has a dimmer.
Yes, exactly. When you dock your device, you don't have to set the timer on the time command because it just picks it up from your Apple device. It also, something I have never seen before on a dock. The dock is spring-loaded so that if you want to dock your Apple product with the case on, you the adapter will spring forward a little bit so it can slide onto the connector with the case intact. So that's neat. It also has a little built-in free internet radio with a choice of 10 different genres of music. It's really pretty, and the sound is exceptional. It's around, the entire thing is circular. There you go.
It looks like a giant hockey puck.
It does. What are you calling me? What are you, Don Rickles? Puck?
So, is the time on the clock on the front of the hockey puck coming from the iPad or iPod?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow. So it's always accurate.
It's always there, but when you take it off, then it reverts to its own built-in time.
But I do like that because the iPod
time goes out.
Yeah,
the battery backup so that it rings even if you have no power to the device.
Very cool. Really neat.
100 buckaroos.
$100. Yeah. And you say the sound is good because that's the one thing I'm looking at it on the website.
The sound is excellent, Leo. The reason I made it round is so that the speakers actually face sort of right and left. So it's incredible separation for such a little guy.
This is from steminnovation.com.
Exactly.
Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah. Time Command, and it is an iPod. Well, I've never seen one of these, both iPod, iPad, and iPhone dock. I mean, it does all three, depending on you know.
Exactly. Now, if you have, and you have an iPad, if you put an iPad on it, it's exactly the width of the device.
Okay, that gives me an idea of how big it is in portrait mode.
Exactly.
Cool. Dick is going to be back in just a little bit. We'll do our show, the weekly Daily Gizwiz show in a few minutes on the Twit Network. He joins us every week. And if you want to know more about his gadgets, you could just go to his website, which is gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. And while you're there, play the What the Heck Is It game, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. See, I didn't mention this at the beginning, but Dick is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's been around since the early days, and every couple of months he has a picture of a gadget. I can't tell what that is. And but the good news is you don't really want to know what it is, because there's only 12 magazines for the right answer. There's 24 for the wrong answer. So by all means, answer wrong, but it has to be clever. Gizwiz.biz. Yes, exactly. And you'll win an autographed copy of which Mad Magazine, the August issue?
That'll be the September issue.
Yeah, because like all magazines, they operate in the future.
We do.
Thank you, Dick.
Okay, Leo, I'll see you in a bit.
Well, stick around. Don't go anywhere. We'll get you on the show in just a little bit, but we're going to continue on, answer a few more questions in a second. In fact, I'll tell you who's next. Let me look. Poor Jill in Pasadena has been waiting for the longest of time. Maybe we talked to her last week. I don't know. She's having problems with her Yahoo Mail. We've had so many people call with problems with the Yahoo Mail. All right. Jill's next. Pasadena. Hi, Jill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jill. I'm well. I'm sorry to hear you're not having so many good things happen to you. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Did you forget it? Yeah. So that's the you never did update your email address. Yeah.
It freezes up again.
Yeah.
I know that is
so
your
it
fault.
Sounds like what happened when you entered the password is you thought you knew what it was, but maybe there was a caps lock key pressed or you typed a number twice the wrong way. And unfortunately, your recovery email address is no longer valid.
Exactly. So it gives you how old all of this setup was.
I think you're out of luck.
Now,
I don't know what to say. You could try. One thing you might try is try the password you think it is, but maybe turn caps lock on, or you know, just try some maybe some common missteps. You know, you had to type it twice. So whatever you did, it's probably, you know, a pretty easy mistake. Like, instead of typing 9, you accidentally had it shifted and typed left parenthesis. So
Well, that's logical, and that's probably what happened, but...
Well, if you can't guess it...
Every time I tried to start doing that, after a couple of times, of course, it locks me out.
Right. Yeah, you have to wait then, because they don't want somebody to try it over and over and over again. There's nobody home at Yahoo. I think you're out of luck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.